might just be the next governor of Washington State.
All the way to the Capitol!
There's only one small problem. His brother, Mike.
What the hell is a marquee doing here?
His heart is in the right place. Unfortunately,
okay, see ya.
The rest of him never is.
Oh, my God!
You've got to keep this bozo under wraps.
So now, they have to find someone.
Then I am your man.
To keep him under control.
Okay, good first day.
Wait.
And let me just be very clear about Black Sheep, just up front, before we even start the episode. I didn't know.
I didn't know either. I'd never seen it.
Yeah. And I didn't look up the plot before I watched it. And then I watched it.
Well, there's no way that the plot that is available online can prepare you for what actually happens.
There's nothing. There's nothing that can prepare you for it.
I kind of was just struggling and it's a little bit of a slog to get
right
through, to
the first hour. The first hour, you're like, this is just so stupid and a tremendous waste of time. And then,
yeah.
And then you're like, yeah. Oh no, oh no.
The question that came into my mind was, who on the staff of the current people who have run for office watch this movie and say, you know what would be a good idea?
That's what I'm wondering is, it's like, you know how Donald Trump, I think Donald Trump's understanding of pop culture is actually stuck in something like 1983.
Right.
Because Donald Trump still thinks SNL is important, right? Because
mm-hmm.
he watched it every week and he commented on it. And he, like, still thinks being on the cover of Time magazine is important.
Right.
And, like, he still thinks, like, all these weird things that, like, have not advanced past 19. He thinks Howard Stern is important. Like,
what, Howard Stern is important. Okay, I'm a Howard Stern fan. Don't fuck with Howard Stern.
Okay. But he thinks all of that. But, like, has he seen this movie is what I want to know.
I feel like he's like, you know what? Nobody watched this movie. It was a bomb. It was a bomb.
It was a huge bomb. Huge bomb. Terrible. It starred the fat guy and the gay guy from SNL. And then, like, Steven Mnuchin had to be like, sir, I don't think David Spade is actually gay. I think you're just projecting that onto him. No, he's gay. Anyways, I like the part where they took the guns and they went to the Capitol.
Wait, okay. I have, you know how I have face blindness when it comes to white men?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I forgot that this movie had David Spade because for some reason I thought it was Dana Carvey.
No.
I always confuse those two.
I don't think that's face blindness. I think it's two things. I think one, Dana Carvey just disappears so effortlessly into whatever role he's in. Really?
Into the role of David Spade?
Really, he's a master of disguise. I mean, that's why... That's why they made that movie. And then David Spade is so so devoid of talent or memorability of any kind.
No, I wouldn't say that. Wow, you're coming in so hot and negative today.
I don't even know how we're going to handle this one.
When I caught a reflection of you and me, staring back at us while frozen on the screen. Crank the white noise and pretend that we're asleep. We're asleep. Dream, 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 dream.
Hey everybody, welcome to Probably Should've Known Better, a podcast where we celebrate comedy that has not aged well. And that includes our choice today. But before we get into it, I want to introduce myself. My name is Nadia Vasquez, and I am joined, as always, by the David Spade to my Chris Farley.
No, come the fuck on.
Tony Tinocchio.
I'm not David Spade. Can
you want to
be like,
Gary Busey instead?
No, can I be like Tim Matheson?
Yeah.
The guy who plays the candidate.
We're going to talk about Black Sheep today.
Black Sheep. So, this season, all SNL films, right? Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do, or I wanted to do, a Chris Farley, David Spade film. And there's two of them, right? There's Tommy Boy, which everyone has seen 1,000 times.
I'd never seen it.
Oh, you never seen it?
No. I would have been fine with either because I had never seen either of these.
Yeah, it's fine. Rob Lowe is the bad guy again, you know.
Oh, tried and true.
Yeah, there's some memorable lines. Fat Guy in a Little Coat is from there, and Niner, are you talking about walkie-talkie? It's like kind of this fun kind of cult comedy classic. And then they made another one called Black Sheep, which is the one we're going to talk about today. And here's what I want to say up front.
Okay.
I would say in Probably Shoulda, we group most of the movies we have watched into like three rough groups. We have the movies we like watching, and those are like good movies that have the occasional unsettling or weird drawback. Usually a bad script with a good performance behind it. So like Grease, I think, is a good example.
Right.
Big, Mrs. Doubtfire. These are all movies that are fun to watch, but if you actually think about them, you start to have some problems. Then we have kind of like the bread and butter Probably Shoulda ones, which are things that are bad, but bad in an interesting way.
Yeah, we celebrate them.
Yeah, What Women Want, Hitch,
yes.
While You Were Sleeping, Look Who's Talking, Garden State, all the Jeff Dunham stuff. I know I joke about Jeff Dunham being good. He's actually bad. I will concede he is bad, but the way in which he's bad is very interesting.
Yes, okay, that's fair, that's fair.
Then the third category are the movies that are truly unpleasant, that have no redeeming features, that we deeply regret selecting and watching. Bringing Down the House, It's Pat, The Mask. And I thought, for 60 minutes of watching Black Sheep, that it was going to fall into that third category, because I really didn't enjoy this film, and there's some truly insane... It's truly insane how this movie got made, and there's lines of dialogue I've written down here because it's nuts to me that that's what made it to the movie. And instead, I've had to create a fourth category of film, which is movies that are unpleasant for 60 minutes, and then the final 20 minutes correctly predict the January 6th Capitol insurrection.
I didn't expect this movie to go where it went.
I can't believe it.
I'm seriously, I have to ask, who in this group of people watched this movie and was like, yeah, I have an idea.
This is what we have to do to stop the election from being stolen from Donald Trump, is we have to do a Black Sheep.
It's a verb. I didn't. Well, I was excited for the Nas reference.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, cool, now this is a Fast and the Furious
You're
movie.
Right.
I thought it was going to go in that direction. It did not.
Doesn't. Completely different or opposite direction in many ways.
I was very underwhelmed by the movie in general. I think it's kind of like Hitch, where you can put it on in the background and it's on. You know what I mean? But I thought, you know, this, there's, I don't know, 30 minutes left of this movie. I wonder if I could get away with not watching it.
And you can't.
No. It would have actually, if you started talking about it on the pod and I had been like a liar and was like, yeah, I saw the whole thing, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, like I said, I watched this movie 60 minutes stone-faced, imagining the movie playing in theaters, half-empty theaters, to dead silence. Not a single thing making me laugh. And then the final 20 minutes of the film, I'm just screaming continuously, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. So Nadia, can you take our listeners through what we would consider to be the plot of the film, such that there is one?
Sure. So Chris Farley is a... I don't know what he is. He works with kids at a recreation center. And he has a brother who apparently is a very great politician, which I didn't expect. I didn't expect us to have like a great actually helps the people politician.
Yeah, an honest, like, kind of good man of the people, challenging the incumbent type of guy.
Yeah, so Chris Farley wants to help his brother get the candidacy to win the seat of governor. And so he tries all these different things, but, you know, he's not good at anything. He's clumsy. He embarrasses everyone around him. And so his brother's aide has him take, or his campaign manager has him take, has an aide take him to a cabin in the woods alone so that he can just be out of the way.
Yeah. Stay out of trouble. Don't get in any scandals. Nothing like that.
Because he's just a disaster. But there, so much wacky stuff happens, and Chris Farley yells through most of the movie, and it's fine. But then we get to the numbers are, because he's such a disaster, he's messing with his brother's numbers publicly. Everybody is like, this new guy has a crazy brother, we don't want him. So, but weirdly, the incumbent governor is really ahead in the polls. And it turns out that she put all of her staff up to using dead people's names to vote for her in the election. There is a culminating scene at the end where the governor-elect is giving her acceptance speech, and Chris Farley exposes her, but there are also a lot of weapons.
Like, and again, I'm gonna say it all in a row so you can all get it in your head. This movie ends with people with guns going to the state capitol building during the certification of an election, taking hostages, and demanding that the election be overturned.
Right. However, the good guys were the ones who were
right.
The vigilantes. Yes. But that's obviously not the case with what has happened in the past in real reality. Can we please just emphasize that? So we, in real life, we are not on their team. We're not on
real
those people's
life,
team.
And I want to be clear. I am personally against going to a Capitol building armed to overturn an election. So Nadia is on that too.
I'm against it. But okay. In the movie,
we are con that. We are anti that.
Yes.
Black sheep, pro this.
Pro that, because it's Chris Farley and he's helping his brother and it's all out of love.
It's
not the same.
Utterly insane. This is a movie from 1996.
Well, you know how, like, The Simpsons predict the future?
Right, you're right, yeah.
Black Sheep predicted the future. Is the writer the same?
It's not, we'll get to that. It's Black Sheep, which is a movie everyone half-asses all the way through. Every step of the production on this film was just extra cursed. by the way, 1996, directed by Penelope Spheeris, who, of course, also directed Wayne's World, starring Chris Farley, David Spade, Tim Matheson, Christine Ebersole, Gary Busey, and, as themselves in the role of a lifetime, Mudhoney. And so, it's just everything. This is the most half-assed, poorly thought out, terrible script. Performances are phoned in completely.
I don't agree with this.
Everything about this movie is utterly wretched. I did not laugh once, but then it predicted something that would happen 25 years later and become a harrowing chapter in American history.
I just want to say Tony doesn't speak for me.
And I don't know what to do with any of this information.
No. You don't speak for me, because I don't think that this was that bad.
Oh,
it
okay.
It wasn't
okay.
That bad.
Well, as we go through the lines of dialogue that I have written down, you can tell me just what your favorite Gary Busey line was, and if it was, I can go to your mama's and start a small fire in her panties.
Yeah, first of all, you gotta get your aggro ass out of my ass, okay? You gotta chill, because it wasn't that bad to me, but you don't gotta be hostile to me. Be hostile towards the movie.
Okay, that's fine.
I thought it was a really cool, because I don't know much about Chris Farley. Like, I wasn't watching SNL at that time, mm-hmm. which was 96 was season 22, and I'll go into that in more detail. But, like, I don't know what he's all about. I've seen the, like, two iconic, like, the Chippendales
yeah.
And then the guy who...
Matt Foley.
Yes. And yeah. So I've seen those, and I'm like, okay, cool, like, he's really funny. But to see him in, I guess, his element in a movie was interesting. It was really not what I expected, but it was mm-hmm. really cool. And he is very talented. Was very talented.
He
rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Chris Farley. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, he is a very talented comedian. Tommy Boy was probably a better showcase for him than this. But he has this ability to be this kind of huge, destructive, loud, clumsy force while still being very endearing.
Yeah.
He
was genuine behind, like, his yes. why was very genuine. And so I was like, I was standing behind him. I was like, great. Yeah. He did a lot of yelling, though, and I think that was more the directing.
Yes, but he yells a lot in everything he's in.
Oh, okay. All right, he's just a yeller. That's just his choice.
But all that said, let's talk about season 22 of SNL.
Season 22.
I have a feeling when we talked about 1994, we were like, SNL had just hired an all-new cast. They were kind of in a rebuilding year. Mm-hmm. What was going on in this season?
Season 22 was... 96 was like a really great year for pop culture because a lot of people who were involved in pop culture were coming from SNL. Okay. So there were actually 7 of the 20 hosts that came through were former SNL cast members.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting. It included Dana Carvey, the Master of Disguise himself, Robert Downey Jr., which we all forgot he was on SNL, Phil Hartman, may he rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Chris Rock, Martin Short, Mike Myers, and Chevy Chase, and that was also the year Chevy Chase got banned from ever hosting again.
Sure.
We always forget that happened, and then we were like, oh, this old man who's on Community is racist and horrible? He's never shown
it's
any
like,
kind of
it's
behavioral
like, if
problems.
Only we had known.
this is the year, this season was the first year that David Spade had left. So Farley and Adam Sandler had gotten fired 2 years mm-hmm. prior, and David Spade had been left behind. And then he left kind of for his own reasons, ended up being on Just Shoot Me, but we can talk about that in the section that I love. Good for them.
Good for them.
But the cast was pretty fucking stacked, dude. It was Jim Brewer, Will Ferrell, Anna Gasteyer, Daryl Hammond, Chris Kattan, Norm MacDonald was anchoring Weekend Update. We had Mark McKinney, Tim Meadows, Tracy Morgan.
Hey,
the
all
best.
Right.
Sherry O'Terry, and of course, Molly Shannon. The featured players were Colin Quinn and Fred Wolfe. So it was pretty great cast. As far as hosts go, again, lots of former SNL castmates were hosting, but we also had Tom Hanks, Lisa Kudrow, and Bill Pullman.
Wow. Mr. President himself.
Yeah, definitely. Probably around Independence Day time, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He definitely wasn't hosting for, what is it called?
While you were sleeping.
the musical guests of that season included Sheryl Crow, New Edition, Dr. Dre, Snoop, but when he was called Snoop Doggy Dogg, Spice Girls, No Doubt, Fiona Apple, and the great Whitney Houston. May she also rest in peace. So, I mean, not... the worst cast, not, I wouldn't say the best cast, but it was great.
No, but you, I mean, so this would have been like, I guess really early in Will Ferrell's career, right? But,
yeah. I think it was his second or third year.
Yeah. If he and Sherry O'Terry were both on, they were doing Spartan Cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Norm MacDonald as host of Weekend Update. You know, and those musical guests actually are quite stacked. So that's really cool. I'm glad you brought up Fred Wolfe because he is actually the screenwriter for Black Sheep.
Nice.
And I kind of want to talk about this, how this movie came to be. So Tommy Boy had come out, I think the year before, or maybe 2 years before, and it was like a modest success. Like it made all its money back, made all its budget back, and it did fine. It didn't do fantastic, but it did fine. And Paramount Pictures was like, shit, we could have had another Wayne's World with this.
But we didn't market it heavily enough. So they went to Lorne and they said, Lorne, we need to do a second Farley and Spade movie. And Lorne said, yeah, I own the souls of everyone who's on my show, so we can just do that. And so Farley basically was starting to get offers for, like, bigger movies, and he wasn't super keen on doing another SNL production. Because, like, he got offered The Cable Guy, which went to Jim Carrey, and Jim Carrey, that was the biggest paycheck for a comedy role ever at the time.
Holy
it was, like,
shit.
$20 million, yeah.
Can you imagine Chris Farley as that? I don't think he could pull off the
be a
scariness.
He can't pull off the medieval time scene, for sure. One of my favorite scenes in any movie. So Farley didn't want to do it. Spade did, because he fucking knew where his meal ticket was. Aww. And so they, so Lorne pulls in Fred Wolf, who is a cast member on SNL and who did, like, punch up on the Tommy Boy script. And he said, you have to fucking get me a script for a Farley and Spade vehicle, like, in 2 weeks or whatever.
Oh, and fuck, okay.
And if you don't, I'm going to sue you for breach of contract. So Fred Wolf turned in a screenplay, like, at 11:59 the day it was due. It was 45 pages long. I'm pretty sure they just shot the 45-page screenplay with no notes or revisions. Wolf was, of course, on set as the writer, and Penelope Spheeris fired him from the film 3 different times, and Lorne Michaels kept hiring him back. Spheeris eventually fired Wolf a 4th time and banned him from the set. So this movie, which was kind of rushed to production because Paramount wanted a Wayne's World level hit and instead predicted Stop the Steal, this movie was rushed to production, kind of rushed through in terms of the shooting and certainly the writing. And while we see kind of the, I think, sketches of a 3-act structure, you notice there's some stuff that's missing. There's no love interest. There's, the villain is severely underdeveloped. There's a couple of, lines that strike me very clearly as, like, first draft lines where they were like, we're definitely going to put a better joke in here later. And they never do. There was one thing that approached being funny, which is, of course, when Chris Farley yells, kill Whitey, at the Rock the Vote concert. But it's like, everything about this movie just feels very cursed.
Yeah, it seemed really dark in a way that wasn't really justified, which was where I was having a lot of trouble. Because I saw where everyone was coming from. At least why people were doing the things that they were doing made sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you felt on January 6th, too, right? You're like, well, if you look at it from their perspective.
No. But the problem for me was I feel like it was just a bunch of different sketches all together,
mm-hmm.
loosely put in with a plot. I actually would have rather watched the really good and honest guy running for governor a little more.
Yeah, just Tim Matheson.
Like, yeah, I think he was great, and I think his character was really interesting. Like, well, you are actually a good guy? Cool. Yeah.
And it's funny because he's on the West Wing. He plays the vice president who has to resign in disgrace after having an affair.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so yeah. He has a type. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite of... It's better than It's Pat.
Well, yeah, sure, okay.
But I think it was cool to see Chris Farley doing his thing.
Yeah.
It was fine. Gary Busey was just as scary as usual.
Yeah, this is very scary Gary Busey. Playing a very scary character who it later turns out is like a 3%er militia man. I can't get my head around how this movie happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that there wasn't a whole lot of prep put into it. This is one of those movies where you can watch it and then you'll forget you'll ever watched it.
Yes, but not anymore.
Well, no, not anymore. Like, I think before you could have. Like
before.
Yeah. Like if, Good Burger is up there for me.
Yeah.
Where it, I'm like, Good Burger is, I forgot.
If we had watched this movie in an earlier season, some, I don't know why, because nobody ever thought of this movie. If we had watched this movie in an earlier season, I would have been like, this is dumb. And you would have been like, it's dumb, but it's not that dumb. And then that would have been the episode.
Yeah. But this is dumb. It's dumb, but it's not that dumb. Did they predict the future?
Did they predict the future? The other thing, I mean, you said it was fascinating to see Chris Farley doing his thing. And it is. Him punching into the voting booth to, like, save the old ladies, I think.
She could have just crawled out the bottom.
That does actually kind of work.
Yeah.
It's okay, ma'am. That sort of thing. Would we say David Spade has a thing that we can watch him do?
No.
Yeah. that's the other issue I have is, like, his lines are like, all right, good first day, but he's being sarcastic.
Yeah, he's good at being, well, okay. I'm going to say something controversial yet brave. There are certain actors out there that are hired to be the, like, sarcastic,
yes,
straight man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like, this is where it gets controversial. I feel like around this time, there were a lot of mediocre, talented people. I wouldn't even say talented. Mediocre performers. But they were good looking, or they were friends with somebody that they were working with.
Sure, yes.
And I feel like it's harder to get away with it now.
Yes.
So I wouldn't say, I think David Spade absolutely came into his own. I think he is very funny, and in the characters that he does, like, much later, like, when he's on Just Shoot Me, I think he's great.
He got an Emmy nomination for Just Shoot Me. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he's not an untalented person, but I feel like he just wasn't fully formed.
Yeah.
By this time.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think I think in nowadays, he probably wouldn't have been successful until much later in his career, because there was just too many other people who could have handled it a little bit better. But, you know, this is what happened. This is the way that the cards were dealt for him. So, like, good for him, you know?
Good for him.
But it pains me to see Chris Farley teamed up with somebody who just isn't at the same caliber.
No.
So I was disappointed because I expected more. I've never seen a Chris Farley movie. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, this is the iconic duo. And it just really didn't do anything for me.
And, you know, I feel like Tommy Boy, to some degree, he's a little better. But it's still, like, it's Farley's show all the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what a Farley Sandler movie would have been like. Chaos.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been. I mean, comedy without a straight man—that's truly coaxing something dark out of the blind eternities that we don't want to touch.
I mean, I'd never seen Grown Ups. Maybe is David Spade the straight man in Grown Ups?
I've never seen Grown Ups. Why would I go out of my way to see Grown Ups?
Well, Maya Rudolph is in it. I want to show some respect to my queen.
Oh, okay. Okay. So let's talk about the movie.
Let's not.
Okay. Okay. Well, there's a couple things I want to hit, though.
Like, no, I know. I know we have to, but I don't want to.
Let's start with, like, we can even skip large swaths of it. That's fine.
Yeah.
There's, like, an opening gag where he drives a truck and he gets chased by dogs and he drives a truck into a theater marquee during a camp. Chris Farley drives a truck into a theater marquee during a campaign rally. That's the opening scene. It's stupid. Don't care. But what about the, like, extremely half-assed B story meant to ground Chris Farley's character, where he's working with kids at the rec center?
That was the first thing where I was like, oh no, because there is a scene, there's this kid, he's really, really talented, he's very good at playing football.
Great arm, yes.
I don't know much about sports, but if you have a great arm, you're valuable in some way. So before all the concussions hit and you are unable to speak, you... Chris Farley is your mentor, is what I'm hearing from this. Yes. So he takes the kid home and is like, I'm walking you to your house. I'm a strange adult man. I'm the only person who is a chaperone in this area. And let me meet your grandmother. Hello. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to work with you every single day. And
every single day. One-on-one.
One-on-one alone. And in my head, I'm like, no. No, absolutely not.
Speaking as a former employee of the Catholic Church, they they don't let you do that anymore. No. So
that was the first thing where I was like, all right, I'm not sure I buy this. But behind all of that, he is great with kids.
He
cares deeply about keeping kids out of trouble.
Yes, and I think I get what they were trying to do, but they touched that part here, and then
they never talk about it again.
They hit it one more time for 10 seconds later in the movie. Where it's like, oh right, I forgot about that kid I'm mentoring in football.
Oh yeah, let me call him real quick. Tell him I'm not showing up. That poor kid was sitting on his stoop. Like, with the football waiting.
Yeah. So that's how we establish Chris Farley's character. So he's an oaf, but he's got a kind heart.
Yeah.
He's very clumsy, but his heart is in the right place. And he loves his brother. Like, his main motivation is he's proud of his brother for running for governor, mm-hmm. and he wants to help him.
And his brother actually loves him back.
That was, I think, a really nice choice.
I agree. It was following the Wayne's World thing of everybody is pretty nice.
Yeah, and same thing with Superstar, except for Evian. But right. To have Sky Corrigan be, like, pretty nice to Mary Catherine. Like, is like, his brother's like, look, I don't want to kick my brother out completely. Like, I want to win the election, but I love my brother. I'm not going to just ice him out.
Exactly. So I'm going to give him some other jobs to do.
Right.
Things that will keep him out of my personal periphery, but will make him feel important and also actually have him help.
Right. We need him busy and out of the way.
So the first thing he has him try is to just do phone canvassing.
Yes.
Which is the gag that I did like that made me laugh was he has a sweatband on because he's going to be doing a lot of hard work, but the phone is tucked into it, so he's like hands-free. It's like, that's fucking genius.
He does some phone, and what is it? He like starts yelling at someone, and that's revealed that the person on the other line is a child.
Yeah, so he talks about his brother, about how his brother has some dreams, and then he's like, I had a dream too. Check it out. It had a hooker and a blah, 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 and like all this horrible shit, plus his grandmother on a bicycle giving him the finger. And then the child starts crying on the other end.
And this is like, this is exactly what I'm talking about when I'm like, so I'm in the middle of working on a book, right? And I have to write dialogue for it. And sometimes I don't know what to write.
I'm a novelist. I'm having so much trouble with my dialogue.
So I just write whatever shit will fill up the page, and I make an annotation in my Google Doc that says, hey, this sucks. Write something better when you go back and revise it. And I feel like they did the first step and not the second step.
Yeah. It was not tight.
So you have some of that, and then we get the establishment of David Spade.
But I have to argue, that Farley really wasn't given much, but he was still funny.
He was working his ass off.
He was sweating visibly.
He was trying so hard to make this movie work.
I respect that. And I didn't think it was as unfunny as you did. I did laugh and like I had a chuckle or two. Because of him. Not because of the writing.
Yeah. We get David Spade's character.
Oh, okay. So the way he's introduced was really weird to me.
What's the governor... fastest way we can introduce a character?
So the brother is in the is in a limo with his campaign manager, and somebody from the driver's side of the car is like, hey, if I, you know, help you and I become an aide, does that mean that I'll, like, help you when you, if you win? And he's like, yeah, sure. And I'm expecting David Spade to be driving the limo.
No, he's just there.
But he's in the passenger seat. And I'm like, why?
He's just there.
And then he pops up because the little partition goes down. And he's like, I'm your guy. And, like, why is he sitting up there? Because I'm assuming, I don't know much about politics. An aide is like a PA, right?
Yeah, I mean, in a campaign, you're going to have a million different people doing a million different things. But, yeah, you got guys riding in the car with you, talking about strategy, helping hit up donors, planning events, that sort of thing.
And, why is he sitting up in the passenger seat?
It's not very clear what anyone in the passenger seat behind a partition could possibly be doing.
I know, but the way that he popped up was so... I was like, why is he driving? Who's driving the car?
Yeah. So that's weird.
That was really weird.
And then David Spade basically gets assigned the job. Look, you need to sit on the governor's brother and make sure he doesn't
get into
trouble.
Don't sit on him, though.
Right. But, like, yeah, just make sure he doesn't get into trouble.
Right. So he gets sent to a cabin in the woods far, far away.
Well, even before the cabin in the woods, there's, like, he hits Gary Busey with his car. David Spade hits him with his car. And Gary Busey, whom he's never met before, pulls out a knife. And David Spade gets out of his car and runs away. And then Gary Busey, as we later learn, steals his car and drives it away. Also, there's a scene where David Spade, like, looks like he's jerking off. Right? He's, like, yeah, fiddling with something in his pocket, and an old lady is...
Oh, he's about to do the bit that he did with Gary Busey.
Which is, revealing the finger.
Yeah, so he, like, looks in his pocket and digs into his pocket and then gives him the finger. But when he does it to this lady who is being a bee to him, he's like, you know what? Like, she's an old lady. On second thought, I'm not going to do this bit. And then the woman is like, oh, you have a boner.
Yeah.
Again, first draft.
First draft. So the two of them meet.
That poor woman. That was like probably her last role. She was very old.
Spade meets Farley. There's a gag where Farley's working on a car and Spade slams the hood down on Farley's thumbs. And so we just get a lot of Chris Farley screaming.
Mm-hmm. I'm laughing at the Gary Busey thing because, like, they don't really give him much, except just as to be, like, a crazy guy. But we later find out that he's one of those people that only comes into town every once in a while to, like, get food because he's off the grid.
Yeah, he's a militiaman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, like, at first I'm like, who is this guy? We don't know anything about him.
So we introduce Gary Busey's character, don't see him again for an hour, basically.
Exactly.
First draft. Okay. Spade meets Farley, slams the hood of the car on his thumbs. They go canvassing together. Chris Farley's tie gets caught in the trunk of a car.
The part that did make me laugh, they're canvassing outside of a grocery store. David Spade is doing it in a normal way, giving people buttons and pamphlets and things like that. But Chris Farley does a cartwheel in front of someone's face and then hands them a button, and it... It was really great.
It's
his
showmanship.
Physical comedy is so great.
I mean, master of physical comedy, obviously. Like,
I loved it. Yeah. I rewinded it twice because I thought it was very funny, and the people really just did not like his energy, which I understand. And then he's like, let me help you because I'm genuinely a nice guy, and he puts their groceries in the trunk for them, and they're all freaked out. And then he gets his tie stuck when he closes it, and then they drag him away.
Yeah, dragged behind the cart, sending up sparks.
That was funny.
And
Tony, come on. Is this going to be another Shark Tale situation?
It might
where
be
I'm like,
Shark
where's
Tale
your
situation?
Whimsy, dude?
And then, there's this horrible, horrible, bitter and ironic line where the old people are dragging him behind the car, and they're like, he must be all hopped up on crack cocaine, which obviously feels awful now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other weird plot point here is, like, Chris Farley at some point finds some teens committing crimes.
Like, yeah, they're drinking and smoking, like, in a park.
Right. So he, like, starts to hang out with them, but he's telling them not to drink. I didn't follow this scene exactly.
I think what they were trying to do was him mocking them and being like, I'm really cool. I'm drinking. I'm doing drugs. But then some paparazzi people catch him doing that. But then they cut away to the paparazzi driving away with those photos. And then you only hear Chris Farley being like, this is bullshit, and throwing the stuff on the ground.
Yeah. So.
So, like, what happened there?
Not a well-assembled scene.
No. They probably, like, ran out of light.
Did they shoot full coverage on this scene, is my question.
I don't think they did. They're like, you know, we'll put it in ADR at the end.
So, obviously, like, he's causing problems. Because now there's photos of Chris Farley, like, getting drunk with teens.
Right. But he was really making fun of them.
Right.
For being stupid.
And then, like, guys go and set his rec center on fire. And
yeah, and guess the fuck what? They're fucking cops.
Yeah, I do. And that's the other thing. This is another movie, and this is a point in the movie's favor. This is yet another Lorne Michaels production where there are cops, and the cops are worthless.
Yeah, corrupt.
Yeah, just horrible. Awful antagonists. And I think it's a choice, and it's a choice I respect.
I like and respect this choice. So these two coppers are in their plain clothes, and they set the recreation center on fire, and Chris Farley is trying to put out the fire, but there are sets of photos that are taken.
Yes, they photograph him so it can look like he set his own rec center on fire.
But there are also the other existing photos that have these police officers
right.
in
plain clothes. The actual featured. Guys burning it down. Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah. So this is where
is this the most confusing movie, I think? Because explaining it doesn't feel like I'm clarifying anything.
No, but we go to Act 2, so we are like 30 minutes in at this point.
Yeah.
And this is where they get turfed to the cabin in the woods. Basically, there's... So with the rec center burning down, with the photos with the teens, the Tim Matheson character, the candidate for governor, is like, look, we gotta put my brother in the middle of nowhere. So they put him in a county with only 1,500 voters. It's, largely hill people. And yeah. They put him in a cabin that's in the middle of nowhere, and it just has a bat, and there's, like, a scene that just keeps going where they're trying to get the bat out of the cabin.
And he treats it like a moth. I didn't know that you could do that with a moth. Put the moth in the fridge because the light's on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's lot of
lots of comedy.
Farley and I'm just imagining this scene where they're chasing around this bat for 10 minutes, playing in theaters to dead silence, and then the other scene to kind of establish how remote this cabin is in the middle of nowhere is David Spade has trouble getting service on his cell phone, and he. Is wandering around in the hills and gets attacked by, like, the children of the corn, basically.
One of the kids is the guy from She's All That that has to eat his own pubes.
Oh, the pubes on the pizza guy. He's in Can't Hardly Wait, too, right?
Yeah
that guy was in everything in this era, yeah.
I was like, oh, hey, it's Tony's favorite movie he probably watched this weekend.
Yeah. So he gets attacked by the hill people while an electric guitar version of Dueling Banjos plays, which doesn't even make sense. They spray him with a fire extinguisher, and then David Spade says, thanks for not shoving the nozzle up my ass first. And then they go back and they shove the fire extinguisher up his ass and release it.
Yep. And then they play checkers.
And this leads to the most incredible line I think we've ever heard in any movie, which is when David Spade comes home from being sodomized by these children, which is weird to say out loud, and he comes home and he's got fire extinguisher exhaust all over his pants.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Farley says, "Oh, you fall in some mud or something?" And David Spade dismissively says, and I wrote it down so I'd get the wording exactly right, "Yeah, that's it. I'm going to be rich because I'm the only person who knows where to find white mud." What?
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 White mud?
What?
Makes you rich?
What? He said crud. What's white mud?
He said you fall in some mud or something. And then he said, "I'm the only person who knows where to find white mud."
Is that a euphemism for something?
I don't think it was.
Well, should we Google what white mud means? Because maybe it means something.
I don't want to put that in my search engine.
Hold on. I'm on incognito. Hold on. White mud. Oh. It's a thing.
What is it?
It's a soft, chalky clay called kaolin, and it is widely used to make porcelain, paper, and paint.
So it's, like, actually valuable?
Yeah. In the Google images that come up, it's, like, people doing face masks, and then there's one screenshot of David Spade. I think, you know why we don't know what this is because we're poor. Because this is a rich person thing.
Okay.
So all that whole section of us going what is just us outing ourselves as being like middle class.
Okay, I'll cut that. Anyways, some more stuff happens. The cabin gets destroyed. It gets there's an avalanche.
Yeah, because it was caused by Chris Farley screaming.
By Chris Farley yelling during a game of checkers.
Right.
Who is yelling.
Because David Spade never moves his back line. Which, again, first draft.
Like, it's just like, I don't even, Chris Farley's so upset at David Spade, so upset that he yells so loud that it causes an avalanche. So upset at David Spade for playing checkers without moving his back row of checkers. Couldn't Chris Farley also not move his back row of checkers?
Not the way he plays. And then the house gets, like, destroyed, kind of. They can still live in it.
You can still live in it, but it doesn't have a roof and it's on a tilt. So they have to stand on a perpetual smooth criminal lean whenever they're in it.
And then it rains and there's no roof. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But... the fridge knocks over and falls on top of Farley when the house is being destroyed. And David Spade says, "Are you okay, buddy?" And Farley says, "I think I got a bowl of chocolate pudding in my underpants." And David Spade says, "We didn't have any pudding in there, buddy."
And he's laughing. He was breaking that line.
Like, that's a laugh line.
Well, they laughed because Spade laughed during... like, that was the best take they could have gotten.
Spade...
he was, like, giggling through that whole line.
Spade could not contain himself.
They love shit jokes. Listen, let's move on.
Let's move on. Should we just go straight to Rock the Vote? Is that okay? Okay.
Yeah, let's
do it. So Chris Farley's like, "Look, we got to go back and find my brother. I'm sick of being in this county with only 1,500 voters." I'm saying that number again because it is important.
Right.
It can't be in this county. So they go to his brother's next campaign stop, which is he's going to be at a Rock the Vote concert. Hey, remember Rock the Vote?
Hell yeah, I do.
Sorry, and other call out here. We learned that David Spade's character sleeps with a bunch of porno magazines in his bed.
Yeah.
Which is not how you use porno.
Yeah, you got to be secretive and shamed.
The shame. Maybe it's because I'm Catholic, but the shame. Shame is so strong. Anyways, so they go to the Rock the
Vote
concert.
We were about to go down a hole down the road, but you stopped yourself.
Yeah. They go to the concert. Farley impersonates a bouncer, which is easy because the two bouncers are played by his real-life brothers.
Right.
He walks in on a reggae band backstage who just stares at him and smokes weed. So that's kind of funny, I guess.
Yeah, then he gets secondhand high.
Mudhoney performs there themselves. You know that band Mudhoney from 1996 that everybody still talks about?
They were doing their best.
Lorne Michaels is like, well, Ween didn't work out, but I feel good that Mudhoney's going to have a breakthrough moment here.
I feel like by then, Lorne was old enough to be like, what are the kids like? I don't really know. Let's just pick whatever Sandler says.
But one of my favorite parts of the whole movie is Farley hangs out with the reggae band and learns critical race theory.
Oh, yeah, that he's like, oh, man, like, everything is racist. Yeah. And the guys are like, yeah, it is. And I'm like, okay, cool, we're back to a cool kind of message. I'm into this. And then, first of all, when I'm high on weed, I don't have the kind of energy that Chris Farley has in this scene. And he's supposed to be very high.
Right.
And very confused and goes and accidentally takes his brother's place talking about the campaign.
Goes on stage as his brother.
High. Out of his mind. High. But like I said, nobody, when they smoke weed, can do what he just did.
So, you know, I think we've talked about this before, Nadia, but I've actually never smoked weed. So I'm going to need you to kind of talk me through this here. So when you smoke weed, like, your thing is like, I want to get up and do some public speaking, like, in front of a large...
It's different for everybody, and there are different strains that do different things. But the behavior displayed there is not somebody who has smoked a lot of weed. Not or typical. Secondhand smoke weed.
Yeah. Voting kicks ass, right?
And the crowd, it's fine. The crowd is into it. The crowd is into voting. Yeah.
You gotta fight for your right to vote, which is hilarious because that's a thing people actually have to do now.
Yeah.
And then he yells, "Kill Whitey!" As the crowd just goes silent.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
I actually did laugh at that.
That was pretty great. And I just want to say, if you want to go and get like a really great snapshot of the grunge movement, all the costumes, absolutely incredible. See, there was a lot to appreciate about the movie besides the movie.
I'm going to be honest, Nadia, you are bringing me around.
Yes, this is another Shark Tale moment
for me. Another Shark Tale moment. Okay, so basically, the concert's a disaster. His brother actually yells at him.
Oh, yeah, he's had enough. He's like, I'm trying to keep you out of this, but you are making this harder for me. And he becomes what we don't want him to be, which is a selfish politician.
Yes, and that's act three, motherfuckers. Here we go.
By this time, I'm like, okay, maybe I could get away with turning this movie off.
Which, as we now know, horrible mistake.
But I was like, you know what? I can't lie. I have watched every single movie that we have watched on this podcast. I can't start being lazy and a liar now.
Farley and Spade go back to this county with only 1,500 people, back to this cabin which doesn't have a roof and which they have to walk on a tilt. And they're like, we got to watch the debate, at least. We got to find a place with a TV. So Farley takes them to Gary Busey's trailer, where he has all his booby traps and his weapons. And I guess the plan is we're just going to break into this guy's trailer and watch his TV.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's not like they knock on his door and introduce themselves. Like, oh, he's not here. Let's just go inside and watch his TV.
Yeah. They don't know, like, when he's coming back. Or, I don't really know how to justify this.
But we do get them watching the debate, and the brother comes through in the debate.
Yes. Because they keep trying to make the governor incumbent, this fucking bitch, who is apparently very racist. In a previous scene, she is talking about her nanny, how she's like totally legal, but then talks down to her because she doesn't speak English. She knows speaka. Horrible. Fucking, I hate this woman. And she keeps trying to bring up Chris Farley. Your brother is wild, basically. But this guy, he's actually a really great, honest politician, so he knows how to turn it around. And he's like, it's not about my brother. He has a lot of problems, but not as many problems as the stuff that you have caused. Mm-hmm. And people are like, hell yeah.
Yeah. Gets in an awesome own. And
would you say that he is the Bernie Sanders of Washington?
Let's talk through the rest of the plot of the film before we get there.
Okay.
So the brother comes through, Spade goes out to pee, Gary Busey finds him, because he comes back home and threatens him, and the joke here is Spade continues to pee his pants intermittently throughout the scene.
Yeah, that's the joke.
So there's that. Farley attacks Gary Busey, and in doing so, earns his respect.
Yes, he likes his moves.
Yes. And then we have, God, we're just going to kind of, Jesus fucking Christ, this movie. There's like the photographs come out of Farley starting the rec center fire, and then, which is a lie, it's a frame job, right? But those come up. And then finally it's election day. We get one, I think, funny bit of physical comedy where Farley gets wedged in a voting booth and has to punch his way out and then punch out two other old ladies so they can get out of the voting booth.
He's like, I'm gonna punch through, ma'am, and then boom, just straight down into the ground into this poor woman's face.
Yeah,
it was great. I loved it.
Yeah,
I love seeing small old ladies get punched.
Yes. And again, like, the thing that Chris Farley is good at is, like, when he's just this big destructive tornado of a man, mm-hmm. but he's also very sweet.
Right, he's trying to save them.
Right, and I think that's like the best. I think that's the best we're gonna see from his character for the rest of the film.
Yeah.
So the election returns come in, and the brother lost. Like, the scandal was too much to overcome. The incumbent governor gets reelected by a pretty healthy margin. And heck, she got, what, 1,600 votes in Chris Farley's county versus 200 for his brother. And it's here that the movie begins to take a turn.
Yeah. Didn't expect this to happen.
Because Chris Farley notices that they're reporting 1,800 votes in the county that he's been canvassing for a month, and he knows that there's only 1,500 registered voters in the category.
Right. So, where did all those votes come from?
So, this is where I wrote in my notes, holy shit, it's a Stop the Steal story. Holy shit. They go through the voter rolls, they being Farley and Spade, and they realize there is massive, widespread voter fraud occurring. Incumbent governor has somehow racked up a ton of votes from people who are dead.
Yep. Including Gary Busey's dad.
And the reason they realize it is because Gary Busey's dad and grandfather were in the voter rolls, and they had died a long time ago.
Yeah, so Chris Farley is like, we gotta go and stop this. This is not fair.
This is a steal. We should stop this. That's not the exact line of dialogue, but what if it was?
And so they call up Chris Farley's friend, who is a cop, one of the only good cops in this movie,
and who's installed Nas in his car.
Yeah, fuck yeah, because this was, you know, Vin Diesel's, I don't know, uncle or his big brother, and he's like, oh, why don't you just take my car, since your car doesn't work because Gary Busey shot through it earlier, and you get there really fast, and then they have to be there at for the 10 a.m.
swearing speech. In, basically, yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, wow, great, thank you. This is wonderful. And they drive all night long, and there is a bit where the guy's like, don't use the tape deck because it shorts out, and the bit is that they're rocking out to some heavy metal, and then it keeps shorting out, and so they stop for a minute, and then it starts again, and they start their headbanging, and then it stops. And, like, that's, like, another, like, this is supposed to be funny kind of thing.
I'm right. Like, okay, it's like, okay, we're going to put in a better joke when we get the punch-up guys in, but for now, just keep the heavy metal thing.
Yeah.
And then they never did.
And then they, yeah. And then, what, that's it. Oh, they get pulled over, I guess.
Well, the thing is, because the nitrous tank gets nicked, right? And so they're getting high.
Right.
As they're driving, and the cop pulls them over for going 7. They've just been driving 7 miles an hour because they're high out of their minds.
Right.
Chris Farley covers himself by introducing himself as Officer Meoff, first name Jack.
Oh, I don't know. I think that's funny.
And then we have the showdown at the state capitol building in Olympia, where they try to sneak in to interrupt the governor's swearing in, but Farley gets caught on a satellite dish and falls from a great height.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So then he grabs a cop's gun, holds David Spade hostage to get onto the dais, and then, like, the governor is called in the National Guard, who were sending in snipers, and then Gary Busey gets up on stage with a rocket launcher, with a bazooka that he's pointing at the crowd as Chris Farley is at the podium screaming, "Voter fraud."
Right. And then he does expose this woman, though.
And he's right! That's what's insane!
Yes, he does expose that she was not great, and then the podium falls on him while he falls on her, and then it looks like they're having sex in the
movie. It looks like he's dry-humping her. There's one more gag where he, like, gets stuck to the side of an airplane. But yeah. It's just, I feel so empty.
It's not the best SNL movie, and I feel bad for Chris Farley because he deserved better.
He does deserve better. But we should talk about David Spade.
What about him?
Well, in our segment, Good for Them, where we explore the careers of SNL actors post-SNL. David Spade is, of course, a successful television actor. He starred in 2 long-running sitcoms, Just Shoot Me, for which he got an Emmy nomination, and Rules of Engagement, which is one of those shows that was, like, on CBS for 12 years, even though you didn't know about it.
Yeah.
He hosted multiple talk shows that you probably don't remember, like The Showbiz Show with David Spade or Lights Out with David Spade. One of the weird things about him when it came to this movie, first of all, Penelope Spheeris fucking hated him.
Yeah.
In an interview that Spheeris did, she once said, quote, "I don't think I've ever even smiled at anything David Spade's ever done."
Oh my God.
Yeah. But also, she kind of indirectly got a revenge because apparently the sunlight on this film and the bright lights on set did permanent damage to David Spade's eyesight. So he has to wear, this is the exact quote from Spade, quote, "I have to wear a hat even indoors, and flashes in particular freak me out. I even have to make them turn down the lights in the makeup trailers. I've become such a pain in the butt with this light sensitive thing. It's a wonder they don't just shoot me."
Wait a minute. How did this happen to him?
According to Wikipedia, it says it was a combination of working under sunlight while filming Black Sheep and the combination of bright lights on set. So, like, my guess is they were out in the mountains or whatever, and he just got a lot, he, like, looked directly into the sun at some point. I don't know.
He looked directly into the sun?
And do you remember when we had the eclipse and Donald Trump looked directly at the eclipse?
Yes.
There's so many, I mean, obviously, like, very bad for our country and may still end up destroying our country, but there's so many moments like that that, like, I'll always cherish.
Wow, this is wild. But tell me more about...
Yeah, so David. The other thing I want to call out with David Spade are his charitable donations. David Spade...
Do we have to?
Yeah. No, David Spade, in 2013, he donated $200,000 for tornado relief in Oklahoma. He donated $100,000 when everyone was doing the ice bucket challenge Right. So he donated to the ALS society there. His sister-in-law, of course, was Kate Spade, the designer, who sadly took her own life in 2018. And after that happened, he donated $100,000 to the National Alliance on Mental Illness as well. However, I would like to focus on a donation he made before all of this. For some reason, I'm not sure why, and no reason is given. In December 2005, David Spade donated $100,000 to the Phoenix Police Department to buy guns, including 50 AR-15 rifles for patrol officers.
Yeah, not feeling very good about David Spade.
So, for having that much money to throw around and buy automatic weapons for your cops, I say, David Spade, good for you.
Yeah, he also is very cagey about his politics.
Mm-hmm.
He says that if I talk about my politics, like, I'll alienate half of my fans, which obviously...
There's no way he's not a Trump guy.
Yeah.
And in fact, he's been, if I remember correctly, openly critical of people who have made fun of Trump in their comedy.
Yeah, he says that people who make fun of Trump as a part of their comedy are just lazy. Mm-hmm. And that's what you say to someone who's like...
in Black Sheep?
Yeah, exactly. it's very interesting because I feel like Chris Farley probably would be like, what are you doing, man? He seems like he would have been a cool guy, you know?
Yeah, no, Chris Farley, absolutely. Actually, the sad thing about David Spade is he famously when Chris Farley died, Spade didn't go to his funeral, and people thought it was because they had a falling out, and it was actually because, like, Spade was like, no, I was not in, I couldn't do it. Like, he was my best friend, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I am curious. I mean, not to make everything gay, but when David Spade talks about his time with Chris Farley, he's like, we were like a married couple, and I'm like, mm-hmm. maybe they were in love with each other.
Maybe you're saying, or even if they weren't, maybe there was a time in the studio where they were exploring each other's bodies.
Yes! Yeah! But, or, like, maybe even exploring each other's, like, heart.
Yeah, soul, right.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Here's my pitch for making the movie better.
Okay.
Because one thing notable about this movie is Wayne's World has one, Ladies Man has one, It's Pat has one, Superstar, of course, has one, Blues Brothers kind of has one, not really. There's no love story in this movie.
Right.
There's no romance.
Don't
introduce a new character. Make the Chris Farley character and the David Spade character fall in love.
Yeah. What if they're in love?
The movie would be ahead of its time in two ways, then.
I mean, I can see it happening. Like, you know, he's got the porno, and he's like, oh, this guy, he, like, doesn't have any shame. I'm into that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, there's something there. There's something. I think the shared trauma of participating in an armed insurrection at the state capitol building, that could be something, too.
That could be something, dude. Okay,
so keep an eye out for Gay Black Sheep, written and directed by Tony Chinocchio and Nadia Vasquez.
Fuck yeah.
Now, was there anything from Common Sense Media? That's the thing. I don't think anyone has seen this movie.
No, it doesn't even have a page on Common Sense Media. Common Sense Media was recently bought out by someone else, and then they're going to be making, newsflash, they're going to be making a TV network.
Yes, a streaming channel, right?
Exactly. And so I thought something must be wrong with the website that Black Sheep isn't on here. So I need to see if maybe they changed the entire website. But no, nobody's seen the movie, so there's no need for a Black Sheep page.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. This movie obviously was a big flop. Roger Ebert didn't like it. And his partner, Gene Siskel, who they reviewed movies together in Chicago for many, many years. They worked at the two rival papers.
Oh my God, are you explaining this to somebody who is, like, young? Because, like, I feel like the only TV review or movie review people I knew were Siskel and Ebert.
That's yeah. It was the only. So kids back in the day, there used to be a TV show where two old dudes would sit in chairs and talk about four movies they had watched that week.
Right.
This was before podcasts. So, this is one of like three films ever that Siskel like walked out on.
Oh no way!
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. I believe it.
So it's just it's insane. It's a mess. It's crazy because it obviously like has this weird resonance with something that just happened 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And yet I don't know what to do with this information. I feel like no one else has figured this out, that the insurrection is based on the movie Black Sheep.
I mean, you think that those guys were like, we should Black Sheep, like that's their favorite?
I could see like someone like Stephen Miller, who's an absolute fucking monster, I could see this being his favorite movie, because what's a comedy that an absolute fucking monster would like? Probably Black Sheep.
That's mean.
I'm sorry.
I feel like this movie is too good for that guy.
That's true. His favorite movie is It's Pat. His favorite movie is probably fucking Bringing Down the House, and he's like, you know what? Minorities are funny.
But only Queen Latifah.
They're to be laughed at. So I know it was tough. I know you guys went into this episode thinking, what are they going to say Stephen Miller's favorite comedy is? And we got there. But God, this one was tough for me, Nadia. This one was real tough.
I understand. It was pretty tough. It wasn't horrible, though.
And I know, I'm sorry I put you through it. I'm sorry I snapped at you earlier.
It's okay, pal. Don't worry about it. I understand. I mean, I felt this way probably about The Mask.
Yeah. No, we both felt this. We were both upset with The Mask.
Yeah. And I'm still to this day arguing with people about my take on The Mask. But I stand by my take on The Mask.
Yeah, and so do I. It's trash. And if any of you are coming to Nadia and trying to well actually her on The Mask, you take it up with me at IMAX Afterlife on Twitter. You actually can't DM me because it's a private account, but still.
But yeah, leave me alone.
Leave Nadia alone. Leave Nadia alone.
Their argument, the argument specifically from one of my friends is that the scene where I'm like, oh my God, and then he does the awooga and his eyes bulge out of his head and his tongue flies out. He argues that that's how I am when I talk about boys.
Okay, so he's not way off.
Fuck you both.
Any final thoughts, Nadia?
Justice for Chris Farley.
Justice for Chris Farley. Maybe check out Tommy Boy if you get a chance. That one's that one's probably on cable right now.
Yeah.
But
is it like The Hitch where it's always on?
Yeah, Comedy Central probably has it on right now. In the meantime, we are halfway through the SNL season.
It's going by so fast.
If you're keeping track, we got some more sketch-based films to do, and then we got a few other fun ones we're gonna do as well. So please subscribe, please leave reviews, and keep following us at Probably Shoulda, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
I'm just a bachelor looking for a partner, someone who knows how to ride it without even falling off. We gotta be compatible. That takes me to my limits. Girl, when I break you off, I promise you I won't get off. And if you're on it, let's do it. I'm riding my pony, my saddle's waiting. So come and jump on it. If you're on it, let's do it. Chance.